Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking. A mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I'm passionate about helping others get into penetration testing and other areas of offensive cybersecurity, bug bounty, security research, all along those lines of the ethical hacking realm. And each of the episodes, I have an interesting guest on. Some of these can be people that just recently got into the industry, people have been in for a while, people from different areas, and hopefully, you know, one of these stories will resonate with you. And today I'm honored to have the cyber mentor Heath Adams on my show. I've been following his career for a while. It's really cool to kind of see what he's done, just his entry into it, because, you know, my familiarity with getting started in the way I see other people get started was kind of different. And just it's really cool that he does all the education stuff he's done, all the mentoring. I really love his sense of community. And one of the things that resonates with me that I really like to see in people like Heath is this is authentic. It's not fake. That, you know, not everyone out there that's trying to help people are legitimately trying to help the people. And so I really feel like Heath is. So welcome to the show, Heath.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the introduction.
Are you welcome? Great to finally get to talk to you one-on-one. We got to speak a little bit at one of the Hack the Box local events in Dallas that was hosted. We spoke a little bit, but really hadn't got to speak much. I was really hoping to get to get out to DEF CON to see you this past time, but my daughter had a procedure and I couldn't make it out. So it's an honor and good to have you on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, we'll link up at some point. I need to make it out to Dallas. I'd love to come out to a Dallas Hackers meeting. And, you know, if we could make that sync up, maybe I'll get your schedule and we can hang out there. But yeah, it's finally good to actually get to sit down and talk to you one-on-one.
Yeah, and one of the things I've been, you know, we'll get into as well, too. One of the things that impresses me with people like yourself, Dave Kennedy, and Alyssa Knight is how good of entrepreneurs you guys are, how you've made businesses and been very successful, where, you know, and you could have went anywhere and been a consultant, work for other people, but it's really cool when people take the risks and see what can be done. Because analogies I like to use a lot is sports related. Someone sets, you know, a record in some run or some event, lifting or whatever, then other people see it can be done. So we have those examples, then it motivates and inspires others. So if you don't mind, could you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started?
Yeah, so my background was actually in accounting. I really didn't know growing up what I wanted to do. I had in mind that I wanted to be a lawyer. That came out of just growing up really, really poor. It's like, what's a good profession that I can do that'll make some money and I don't have to worry anymore? And, you know, I did 3 years in college, was a senior. I started taking my LSATs and quickly realized that I hate everything about being a lawyer and all this stuff. And plus, you'd have to go 3 more years of school and hope you get into a good school that will actually pay a high salary. Because if you're not getting into what's considered the top 14, chances are you're not making the big bank that you hear the other salaries or the other lawyers are making. So I changed my major senior year to accounting. It was something that I basically figured I could get just knock out in about a year and a half and still be able to graduate close to on time. And I only did that because it was safe. It was something that I'll always have a job. I'm good with math. And I just figured, hey, I'll go do this, see how it works out. I graduate, go out into the field, start working, and pretty much instantly realize that I hate this too. It's really hard, as I think, as an 8-year-old moving even into a 21-year-old, to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life. And for me, I was just kept picking things that I think were monetarily based and nothing that was really based for me on passion. So it kept just making these decisions to where eventually I had to really do a deep dive and do a feel into myself where I thought I wanted to be in my career. And the last step for me was, I was about 24, 25, and I had moved to work as a plant accountant. I was working at Fram in the middle of nowhere. Like literally, I was living in one state, driving 45 minutes to another state. It was 2-lane highway. Literally could be late to work because there was a tractor on the road. And I had the boss from hell, the job from hell. It was dark when I was leaving. It was dark when I was getting home. And I did all that for $55,000 a year. And to me, that was a lot of money. But in hindsight, it's really just, it was average money for literally leaving all my friends behind, moving to have nobody, no support system or structure or anything like that. And it got to the point one day where it was lunchtime. I grabbed my keys, I grabbed my badge, I grabbed my company card, I laid it on my desk, and I walked out. And I had no other plan or background. And I just went, I broke my lease. I decided that I was going to move out west and start new and figure out what I was going to do. And with that, and this is not something that I necessarily advise because I did this all on credit cards, by the way. But I figured, you know, I had been using computers since I was 4. I started on Prodigy before AOL. I was on AOL. I was coding bots. I was getting hacked at like 7 or 8. People were opening and closing my CD tray. I was building AOL chatbots and writing in Visual Basic. And my mom was in college, but when I was 10, I was grabbing her HTML books and building websites. And you know, all this IT stuff was always there in my brain, and I was passionate about it. I never even thought about it until like I had that reflective moment and really, really dug deep. So for me, I decided I was going to go in and work in help desk. And I had no experience, no background, nothing on this. I just started applying to jobs with the thought that I've used a computer, I can figure this out. And eventually I was able to get into an interview where I was not qualified. I didn't have any certifications. I had no experience. I told them I would take less money. And that my honest to God answer was, I Google everything, and I will Google, I'll prove myself, and I can make this work, I can troubleshoot. And they took a chance on me, it worked out. From there, was just moving up to eventually network engineering and eventually becoming a hacker and getting into the field.
Oh, that's very cool. Didn't you have a military background too? Were you in the military for a bit?
Yeah, so part of the reflective time period in between, I joined the military, the reserves. I was an accountant still, joined the reserves, went and did medical in the reserves. And when I came out of that, I didn't have anywhere else to go. I started doing an MBA program and ended up going into that Fram job right after the MBA program. So it was basically, I did some soul searching there. I was already hating accounting, did some soul searching, said, okay, I'm gonna take one more attempt at this, because they came and threw a ton of money at me. It wasn't public accounting, which public accounting is like 14, 15 hours a day. They work you a ton of overtime. At the end of the day, it's like McDonald's wages. And that's really where I started, was public accounting, making $40,000 a year, and just working my ass off for what felt like nothing. So I got burned out really quick and joined the military, came back and was doing the reserve thing, and just ended up sticking with that throughout this whole thing. Like as I went to IT, I was still in the reserves, but that was kind of a little bit of the soul searching period that I was in too. I just had to figure it out, the IT thing, until after the Fram job.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how sometimes you had those talents or those talents you developed over the years, like you did learning how to build websites and all that IT related skills that you developed on your own, but you don't ever think about using that for real world. And that's where I think it's really important to have mentors and people that can provide you guidance. So maybe if you would have known someone at that time, that was in that area, maybe you would have got into that sooner. So, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. There was definitely nobody to mentor me. I come from a background where literally it was my mom and myself. My mom did not make the best decisions. She was an only child. I was an only child, and most of my family had passed away by the time I was five. And then she passed away when I was 19. So literally I was just making all these decisions on the fly on how am I going to do this? How am I going to succeed? Because my whole goal was like looking at it from a money perspective, as in I don't want to ever be what I was before. Or if I have a family or have kids, I don't want them to have the same situation I grew up in. So I was looking at it through the lens of money, not through the lens of passion. And I didn't have anybody to guide me and say, hey, you're looking at this wrong. You should chase what you're passionate about. And if you're lucky, the money will come. So once I figured that out, then you know, the tides turned a little bit in my favor. And I think that worked out really well.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense with thinking about the law background and stuff like that, because everyone knows doctors and lawyers if you want to make money. So that makes sense mm-hmm. that you would look that way. And still goes back, it's good that there's people like you out in the community that people can find your video, you know, your stuff on Udemy or YouTube and kind of learn about those things. Cause you know, otherwise a lot of people don't know the opportunities out there. So it's great that people like yourself are showing that's an option out there.
Yeah. And it's just one of those things where that's exactly it. You want to be able to give back to the community and point them in the right direction. And you and I have talked in private before that there's not always people out there with the best intentions of pointing you in the right direction. Sometimes it's for more monetary purposes for them. They'll say, hey, go check out this resource. Well, maybe it's not even the best resource or even a great resource at all. Where, you know, our approach has always been like, or my approach at least has always been, here are legitimately the best resources. It doesn't matter if it's my competition or, you know, if it's whoever it is, I'm going to point you to the best direction that would get you into this field, because this field, at least for cybersecurity in general, it can be life-changing. The salaries are high. If you're coming from poverty, especially, you get out of poverty with some of these roles and positions, and especially if you're interested in this and being able to get the break in is not easy, but pointing people in the directions that will help them, I think is super important, and being honest and upfront on that as well.
Yeah. And just like to, you know, I may have mentioned this already too, but just one of the things I like that you're trying to help people, and it's not just about the money, because I've seen you recommend other people's courses before. And I think that's great. And one of the things I tell people to question too is when you're ever getting advice from someone, or someone's got a community and they're saying, you know, just this community tries to discourage you from going out and seeing other communities, because people like yourself, and I do as well, you know, I've got a Slack for Pwn School, but I'm telling people to go out to other Discords, you know, watch the different streamers, the different educators and all that stuff to get, you know, not only, you know, we talk about diversity and how diversity helps in the workplace. So diversity and learning is important too. You know, you may explain something a certain way that someone gets. Joe may explain something, you know, a certain way someone gets. So it's always good. And sometimes it's like, once you hear it that second or third time, it might click, you know, because for me, learning pen testing and hacking wasn't easy for me. The technology part wasn't, but you know, the diverse people that you have that you're, you know, from your learning resources and mentoring, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, that's honestly part of the reason that I even became an educator, was because for me, I'm kinesthetic. I need hands-on. I need to be able to do what's in front of me in order to make it click. A lot of the content and videos out there was a lot of reading or books or PowerPoint slides. And for me, like, my mind just starts fading away. I start going into a new place and I don't retain any information. So that diversity and having other options is great. Yeah, you're right. Like, I might not be the best educator, even from a kinesthetic standpoint. There might be other people that you just click with better. But having the variety of options out there and being able to promote those and say, hey, go look at like all these people that are out there that can help you, I think is great. Because yeah, it doesn't, one educator might click for somebody and another educator might click for somebody else. And you know, we're in a great point right now, at least in this point in time, where we're not having the YouTubers with the notepad and the EDM music and just the, you know, the crappy YouTube videos that are out there. There are actually legitimate content creators out there that are making really good videos, that work in this field and are really caring about helping people break in.
Yeah, there's a lot of great content. People like yourself, I think, help drive that. It's just interesting to see all the things out there because, yeah, the notepad videos with the EDM music, that is that's just, yeah, I would rather just have a blog post to read and try to figure out how to do something than that.
Show me some pictures. That's all I need. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's great to have that. So really, you know, as we're speaking about education and content creation, how did that, I mean, this really seemed to have a big impact on your career, but from you going through it and your experience, how would you say this helped your success? Did it seem to really impact your success? One would think from seeing that, but.
Yeah, everything. So it just all snowballed. And a lot of people ask me about getting into content creation, and everybody's path's a little bit different. Like mine took off a lot faster than I think some other people. But you look at John Hammond, who has been around for 10 years making videos, hundreds of videos, almost maybe over 1,000 by now, and it took him 10 years to get the recognition that he deserves. And that's just like persistence and being there. For me, it was one of those things where, hey, I started getting, I don't know, 30,000, 40,000 subscribers on YouTube, and that started picking up. And from a business perspective, that's where there were companies coming to the company I was working for and saying, we want Heath to do a pen test for us because we saw him on YouTube, we like him. And my company was going with them, and I was seeing no kickback, no credit, nothing on it. So the wheels became spinning pretty immediately, like, hey, maybe I need to go out and do this since people are already coming in. Maybe I go out, I announce I'm starting my own firm, and let that roll. And that worked out in its own sense. And from there, like, that also gave me the free time to be able to sit down and make a course. Like the first course was the Practical Ethical Hacking course. That was 25 hours in length, but it probably took, God, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 hours to actually develop. And being able to have that amount of time, that's, you know, 6 months of work typically, that was nice to be able to be on my own and doing it. It was very much a gamble as well. I'd been approached by a few big name companies that were training companies, a few big name YouTubers saying, hey, come make a course for us, or hey, give me 50%, I'll promote this course. And I had to keep saying, no, I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to bet on myself, and we're going to see how this works out. And fortunately, it worked out, and it just, that snowballs too. People find you on Udemy or your academy, and they see, okay, this is, I like this guy, I'm going to go subscribe to his YouTube, or I'm going to go check out his business. And that just keeps rolling downhill, and the snowball gets bigger and bigger over time. And one definitely helps the other, and they all kind of play in and interweave at the end of the day.
Yeah, I have to say from a perspective, you know, I started teaching back in January 2018 at a community college, and I've just been really impressed to see what you've done. It's been very inspirational and making me want to get in more into the content creation side, just kind of seeing what you can do there. And you know, a lot of people are in it or want to make a lot of money, but just from, I know, seeing your experience and then the things I've done, just seeing, you know, how that can help your career, just getting your name out there is a good way. And I think it's really kind of cool to see some people that really, you know, some people that probably came from more of a content creation. I mean, you kind of did it along with while you're pen testing and other things, but some people just come more out of that content creation. It seems to open up a lot of opportunity. I mean, because you mentioned John being around for 10 years doing it, and he just got discovered. It just seems like probably just the timing of things too, because you have other people out there that have been creating stuff. I mean, probably before you came along on Udemy, Zaid was probably one of the bigger course developers on Udemy. And then just seems like timing, you know, when you just get in there, it's like technology too. When you look at some of the handheld computers in the early days that really didn't catch on, like, I think, what was it? The Apple Newton was one of the first handhelds, and you're used to Apple being successful, but, you know, even Apple isn't successful all the time. But it seems like if you're at the right time or got the right product, maybe not always the right time, but the right product, things seem to take off.
Yeah, and there's a few things. There's definitely luck involved. I feel like you have the right video at the right time, and it catches the right algorithm on YouTube, and it just takes off. And I feel like once you're a part of that algorithm and you're a popular YouTuber and you're getting enough views, you get pushed to the top more. That's, you know, that's something that takes play. You can control some of that destiny too by Like for me, at least why I think there was some uniqueness is the reason I went and made a course on Udemy was I thought I was filling a niche. There's a million ethical hacker courses out there, but none of them were showing anything about how to hack Active Directory or do internal pen testing. And that was where I got hammered the hardest when it came time to interviewing, because I went through the OSCP. At the time, there was zero Active Directory on it. You go into interviews and they just ask you all these internal questions and there's nothing. So I'm like, why don't we create a course that actually walks through doing pen tests from a real world perspective, as opposed to here's a vulnerable machine off of VulnHub, just go hack into that and you're done. So being able to fill the niches that are out there looking for a niche and filling it with these courses is can help you grow as well. But for YouTube, it's definitely a lot of luck, definitely a lot of self-promotion. I gave a few of my courses to Free Code Camp, which helped because they did cross promotion back to me. So there's definitely pros and cons to all of it, but there are some things that maybe you could help speed along. But at the same time, it's really just waiting for the right moment and getting picked up as well and not being discouraged.
Yeah, I think one of the things too, I think that was good that you did things your own way, because sometimes when you're working from other companies, they don't like things done a certain way. And so at least that you've got the creative license to kind of do what you want to do.
Yeah, it's completely, I own everything. It's my style. It's 100% me. And I'm so glad there were a lot of opportunities to make quick money early on and basically sell half my business. There's a lot of that story repeatedly, especially like even with the certification, the platform, with the Academy first, somebody came along that had a platform that wasn't being used and they wanted 70% of the company versus me keeping 30% and just be able to integrate their platform. And it's just like, okay, I'll just go make my own. Now that platform's dead and the Academy is what the Academy is. So like, again, you have to keep banking on yourself on doing these things and really being able to, I guess, suss things out, because if people are coming to you and they want you as a product, then there's a good chance that they see the value in you. You should see the value in yourself and be able to utilize that on your own.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Sometimes, yeah, and you know, some people will take advantage of you that way. So that's good that you did your own thing. And it's good too that you can do your stuff and have your own personality, because you see, I'm not going to mention some of these other words, you see these boring, stiff videos, and sure, at least you can be yourself. It's more relaxed. It seems more realistic. And I think the viewers like that.
Yeah, I'll say one more story, I guess, before. There was a big training company, you could think of top three, that was recruiting me, trying to get me to come to their platform. And they basically told me, your YouTube channel is going to become ours. Like, no longer will you post technical content there. You can post some content there, but you need to point back to us. Say, hey, if you like what you see, come to this channel or come to this website and take my course here. And everything was now a course. Everything was monetized. No matter what you were doing, you're always pitching and selling. And I'm so glad there was an employee there that reached out to me and said, don't do it. They just prey on big YouTubers, and that's pretty much it. So thankfully I didn't go that direction, but yes, they absolutely want you to sell everything you have and become owned by them. And you are their product and their machine. And I've been lucky and fortunate to be independent this entire time.
And you know, there's probably a lot of YouTubers that may not be making that much, and that seems really appealing to them, and they sell their soul, and then this all belongs to this other company.
Yeah, there's it's easier to see as a YouTuber who's kind of, I don't want to say sold out, and you can kind of tell when people are pitching products that maybe they're not even advertising as paid advertisement, and there's a lot of shady stuff going on, and people have definitely been purchase. It's unfortunate. There are great independent YouTubers that will be honest and transparent and upfront, but not everybody is. So definitely, if you're watching a YouTube video, research the person, understand what their background is, understand what their product placement is, and if those products even make sense for what they're pitching you. And just do your research, I think, at the end of the day, is what's really important.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, because it's a lot I still have to learn about that, because I've tried to get into streaming myself and really debating on the YouTube thing. It seems like that makes sense sometimes to put more effort into than Twitch. I don't know. I'm still kind of learning that myself.
Yeah, so they're own beasts. YouTube is great. It's a nice little recurring revenue. It's a good way to get, like, I would say, followers, get more people to know about you. You're never going to be rich off YouTube unless you're peddling other stuff on your videos and advertisements and stuff like that. You make way more in advertising than you do any monetary from Google itself. But from a Twitch standpoint, it's less viewers, but it's more like, it's more intimate in a sense that with Twitch, there's people that have been there from when I stream that I still see that have been there for 2 years now. And it's like, you really get to know these people. It's like getting one-on-one sessions with your students. Sometimes like you get 200 or 300 people in a stream and it becomes kind of a little bit of fast pace, but at the same time, you still know who everybody is. Where you're talking like, I have maybe 25,000 Twitch subscribers where I have 200,000 on YouTube. Most of those people I'll never know, I'll never meet, no idea. There's that just a less intimate feeling to it. And they're completely different objectives, I think. I think doing both is fine if you can find the time to do it. Twitch people and YouTube people expect you to be on a cadence. Twitch is much more demanding in the sense that you have to be doing 1 to 3 streams a week. And YouTube's like, hey, at least put out one video a week if you want to, you know, stay relevant or consistent. And that's the other side of social media and being in social media is that if you're not active, even if you take a week away for vacation, you are not relevant anymore. So that starts to weigh on you as well. And you have to make sure you're keeping content up even when you're on vacation, that videos are going out and stuff's going out. Otherwise, people burn out really quick over that. They don't realize that once you're out of limelight, even for a minute, it's you're forgotten. So there's a lot of pros and cons on it, but I mean, if you're passionate about making content with YouTube or Twitch, you're passionate about streaming, definitely go for it, see how it goes. And, I mean, if you like it, keep doing it.
Yeah, it's good advice. This is some good stuff because, you know, most of the people I interview don't have that background. So this is an area that's new to me. So I learn from all these podcasts and it's cool to be, you know, learning this from you, because one of the things I really think that has impressed me is the way you've seen the importance of the different platforms, because, you know, you had the huge YouTube following and stuff. And then I remember when you really started getting active on Twitter, you didn't have that much of a following, but it didn't take you long to get a huge following. So,
yeah, Twitter's one of those evils. It's like if it were me and I was not in information security anymore, I was not in social media, I would not have a Twitter. I think Twitter is, Twitter can be great. You can make a lot of good friendships, but there's also a lot of people that hide behind false identities and just intentionally start stuff and really just try to bring people down for no reason whatsoever. So it's one of those platforms that's like a necessary evil, because if you want to be on Twitter or you need to be on Twitter to stay up to date with InfoSec, to peddle or push any of your content that you want, because you are your own marketer at the end of the day, you are your own hype man. So you need that social media platform to be able to do that and to get your message across as well. I think like if you're advocating for something or charities or anything else, like it's a good way to get your message across, but there's a lot of bad on Twitter that comes with the good side as well. So personally, I would not have an account if it wasn't for, if it wasn't for being able to reach the audience that I do.
Yeah, I agree. And you just have to be really careful with that stuff. It was kind of crazy last year. One of my former students that went through my class at the college, he just got his OSCP. The guy was studying real hard. He was a retired LA cop. And so he's like really super nice. And I know some of the problems that there's been with law enforcement and, you know, not everybody's the same. This guy was super nice, but then someone just generically stereotyped him as the bad cop and attacked me for trying to help get a retired police officer a job. Law enforcement, I kind of tried to defend myself. So this guy's a nice guy. And I finally just shut up because I didn't want to get in an argument. And then some people kind of came in to defend me. I mean, even Tim Medine stepped in and said something about that. Yeah, I just can't get caught up in this because I get upset. Then then I look bad. So yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. It'd be real easy for things to go bad real quick.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, is difficult is because you and I both, we have our name attached to our social media. We are, people know our face, people know our name, everything, where often these people are coming in with no pictures, some handle that doesn't tie back to their name, and they will say stuff or start stuff, and you defend yourself, and especially in whatever it is, 260 characters, it's very difficult to do. They will pick that apart and just rip you apart. So I've learned to do the same. Like, literally, unless I absolutely feel like it's necessary to defend like my name or something in a situation, I just let it go. I used to get in fights and arguments when I first started Twitter, and that just ended up with people splitting the room, getting mad at you, and you know, it's just not, at the end of the day, it's not worth it. You know, having a civil debate for me, I'm not good. I'm not like Joe politician, and can sit there and just debate the floor with people. For me, I don't have that debate skill. So somebody can come in there and just you know, make really good points or counter arguments where I know what I want to say, but I can't put it out there. Again, especially in such a limited character format, it becomes really hard. So it's best just to shut up and just let people say what they want. Block. I block a bunch of people if they're just going off. And, you know, I've been successful with that for like the last year and a half for the most part. So it's one of those quick, thick skin lessons you learn when you start growing your social media account.
Yeah, for me, I kind of learned my lesson back in probably the early 2000s on like message boards and forums. Competing in powerlifting, I've been on a lot of fitness message boards and forums, and there's just times you go to debate things, and then there's sometimes you misread or misunderstand things, and if you're kind of you know, lash out at someone, and sometimes, you know, they didn't, you know, it just caused a lot of undue conflicts, and you look really bad and you feel bad after the fact.
Yeah, it's very easy to, I think, misconstrue what people are saying as well. So it's just one of those, you keep hands off, you stay back, and it social media tends to forget very fast as well. There's always something new to drive off to, and I feel like it usually lasts a day or two, and people just completely forget about everything anyways.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Or you come back and you do something that people like, and that totally shifts the way things are.
Yeah, that's it.
So yeah, one of the things I wanted to ask, I mean, everyone sees your content and stuff, but if someone's getting started out, you know, someone's getting, you know, wanted to become a pen tester, how would you recommend, you know, them learn to be a pen tester? Any kind of advice that you would give there?
Yeah. So, I always tell people, first thing first is you got to have a strong foundation. It's just like building a house. You don't want to build a house on a weak foundation. So a lot of people think about hacking and it sounds cool. It is cool, but there's a lot of work that goes into it. When you think about IT, hacking is a very specialized field that's up here, and you're getting started way down here. So you need to build foundational skills, like, and I'm not saying you have to do these certifications, just equivalents of like A+, which basic computing, troubleshooting, how do you build a computer? What are the parts of a computer? It's good to know. Network Plus, understanding your basic network, your CIDR notation, your subnetting, the OSI model, understanding different devices, useful, especially if you're gonna be in pen testing, especially network pen testing. Security Plus can help as well, just to understand the lingo and some of the security concepts. And across all of these, you're learning what ports go with what services, what are the secure services, how do you secure things, and basic security ideas, along with the foundational skills. So I highly recommend building that. You do not have to whatsoever go get these certifications, especially if you can't afford it. I think the help in the beginning with getting jobs, like A+ is going to help you get a help desk job. Security Plus might help you get like a SOC analyst job. And taking these and using stuff like Professor Messer, who's free online. Mike Myers is great. You can usually get his courses for like $10 on Udemy. I've heard they're free even in some places. And if you're a book person, Mike Myers writes books that are, I think, $35-$40, and they're like Bible-sized huge books on the concept. So building out that foundation first, super important. From there, once you say, okay, I've done that, I'm ready to get into hacking, understanding the foundations of Linux, super important. You're going to be running in Linux, mostly Debian-based. It doesn't hurt to download like Kali Linux or even Parrot and just immerse yourself in it. If you really want to start out, you might even start out in something like Ubuntu and just, it's like a language. Like you can go do Rosetta Stone and sit there and pick up language, but it's a lot easier if you just immerse yourself in the environment and you go travel. So if you want to pick up Spanish, maybe go travel in Mexico and stay there for a while, you're going to pick up the language a lot better than Rosetta Stone's going to teach you. Same thing with Linux. You can go watch a course and say, okay, here's how you run a command. But if you go make Linux your daily driver for a week or a couple weeks, and you just really have to fumble around and have no idea what you're doing and Googling through the process, that'll make your life a lot easier. You're going to pick up Linux a lot quicker. I think it's a great way of getting in. Same goes with picking up a coding language. Something basic like Python would be good. And just picking up something like Codecademy is absolutely fantastic. You can pick up Python courses from YouTube. Same with Linux on YouTube. All this can be done for free or can be done for really cheap on Udemy as well. Just look for like really high rated courses like 4.6, 4.7 and above with a lot of students. And typically those are ones that are bestseller, most updated, and will teach you kind of what you need to know. So those are like your foundational skill sets. After that, you can start hacking. I think TryHackMe is probably the best platform out there right now from a free standpoint. You can go in there, you can go literally hack on a bunch of their different boxes, learn to hack. They have in-browser Kali Linux machines. They have a bunch of vulnerable machines, and they have a lot of educational services, which is great. Their paid platform is like $10 a month, totally worth doing the VIP. And I say all of what I'm telling you without anybody in my pockets on these. These are all just great resources. The TryHackMe, if you do the $10, you get access to like their pads. And the thing that I like about TryHackMe is it's the first platform, in my opinion, to come along that was not built with gamification in mind. There's other websites that are out there that are good, but they're more advanced. And they were built more with a, hey, this is like a CTF event. This is a first blood type deal. We're going to see who can hack this and who's the best of the best. TryHackMe was like, we're going to take kind of that concept and we're going to add education to it. So here's a bunch of features now that say, step one, here's what you're doing and why you're doing it. Step two, here's why you're doing it. And a lot of these are free. If not, again, $10 a month, I think it's great. There are a lot of free or cheap hacking resources out there. The Academy, pitching myself, I do have investment in this, but Academy with the Practical Ethical Hacking is a good place to start. You could often get it for $15, $30 at the most. If you go on YouTube, there is a 15-hour hacking course that I put out that was the precursor to the PEH and covers a lot of the same concepts, though some of those are a little bit outdated, though I know a lot of people still go through that and still enjoy it and kind of just get their way through as their introductory to hacking. Once you get your feet wet, then you kind of have the option to kind of go off in the direction that you want. So like as a hacker, for me, understanding external pen tests, which is outside looking in, you're trying to break into a network. Internal pen tests, which is, hey, I've gotten into this network, most likely Active Directory based. What do I do now? And then web app pen testing are usually your big common three. There's also wireless, there's mobile, there's other areas. There's exploit development. There's a lot of fields within the hacking field that you can get into. So really it's about getting your feet wet and figuring out where you want to go and what you want to do. And for me, like I immediately found out, like I'm passionate about internal pen testing. I love Active Directory. I'm going to go take off and this is where I'm going to spend most of my time studying. For somebody else, it could be like, hey, I really love OSINT. I think that I'm going to go be a social engineer. I want to do physical pen tests. That's really cool. Or you might like web app pen testing and you might go do a whole career over there. So you build upon your foundation step by step. Once you get into the hacking, you can kind of figure out, hey, where do I want to branch out? Where do I want to go? And take it from there. And you can, by then, hopefully know how to use Google, do some extra Googling, see what resources are out there that are maybe more advanced than just your basic entry level in those respected fields.
Yeah, that's great advice. I like that. So we're getting down towards the end of the show. I just wanted to open it up to anything you'd like to talk about that we haven't covered.
I think we covered a good deal of it. For me, if you're first time listening, you don't know anything, like I'm big on advocacy for education and cheap education. So you'll often see me pushing out free courses or discounts or whatever I can do to help the community. And my message has been to basically get this get others involved with doing this. The issue that we're having in our industry is that there's a lot of old players in old education systems that teach outdated methods, or if they do teach really up-to-date methods, they cost like $7,000 to get into. There's a lot of universities out there pushing boot camps and pushing different things that aren't teaching you anything related to hacking or cybersecurity, and they're calling it that. Or there's certifications that you go and get, and they're thousands of dollars. And we are on the opposite end of that spectrum, and that's really what we're pushing is like money should not be a barrier to education. Getting people out of poverty can be done, especially in this field, and kind of what we talked about earlier, the high salaries, and really this field can change lives. And if we can get people in and teach them and change their lives, the more the merrier. We're doing that with the education on the academy, with pushing that and the PMPT. Other vendors that are out there doing that, Security Blue Team, I want to give a shout out to. They're doing something very similar where they're doing this on the Blue Team side, but they're having cheap courses, free retakes, you know, making sure that you're out there to pass and they're not out there to make money off of your failures, which I think is important. Same thing with Zero Point Security, what Rasta Mouse is doing. They're more advanced on the red teaming side, but it's the same concept where, hey, we're going to present you a course that's better than what's most out there. We're going to present that to you at a cheaper price than what most people are doing it. And we're going to give you the opportunity to if you screw up, we're going to help you and give it to you again for free so that way you can go back through it, because we really care about your education more than we care about, you know, your money. We want you to get into this. So I think that as more organizations come out there and are doing this, the more the merrier. I'm happy to promote them. I'm happy to talk to those people. And this is where I'm hoping to see cybersecurity go. And really, we can get more of these people in here with these great great content and these affordable prices. And we can start incorporating people in that come from poverty or don't have money, and they can get this education where otherwise they would be priced out. And that's my little spiel and the mission that we're on right now.
Well, I like your mission. And one of the things too, mention that, it's one of the things I like about bug bounties is you see how bug bounties has changed people's lives globally, because people that couldn't make a certain amount of money or be able to buy MacBook Pros, buy cars, provide for their family like they weren't able to before. And I like that. And I do like your mission too, that you're trying to help people.
Yeah, and it's crazy because a lot of people get lost in the bug bounties of, hey, this person just got $10,000 or somebody just got $50,000, I think, on Shopify the other day. And it's like, yeah, those are cool, but those are really, really rare bugs that you're seeing getting upvoted to the top. Is equally as important for somebody from like a third world country where $100 a bug goes a long way. Like a long way. So for these guys to go get $500 or $1,000, it really makes it worth their time. And that's great for them. Like for me, like I don't want to go chase $100 bugs, $500 bugs, but it allows people in those situations where otherwise, you know, it makes for a good living. Like you said, they can buy laptops, they can provide for their families, they can have cars. There's a lot of opportunities out there to make money. And especially if you're coming from like a situation like that, you don't have to go out there and chase the big bugs. Like the big bugs are hard to get in the first place, but if you go hunt the moderates into the highs, you can make a pretty good successful living off doing that as well.
Very cool. Yeah, it's amazing that the money that can be made. Even like you've done some of the Cobalt Core stuff too, haven't you? Or because I know you've been involved with different platforms.
Yeah, I tried the Cobalt Core out a while ago. I did one pen test with them. The interesting thing, so for me, it didn't pay a ton. But the cool thing about it was that one of the people on my team was like top five Cinec. So you get to work with like these other people that it's just like they're incredibly talented. Just absolutely incredibly talented. And same thing goes with HackerOne. I do some pen tests there occasionally, and the talent that you get to work with on HackerOne is just absolutely insane. So you get to see like these people that just do wizardry, it seems like, on these web apps, and you get to learn from them. So there are definitely benefits, even if it's a little bit less pay than you would make otherwise. There's benefits to working and collaborating with other people and seeing their style and their methodology and picking up some tips and tricks from them as well.
Very cool. Well, this is down to the end of the show. So I'd like to thank you again for having a show. It's been an honor. It's great to have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's great to be able to sit down and talk with you, and I hope we get to do it again.
Yeah, same here. So thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.